You're listening to the Gutsy Podcast, where we talk about all things real, raw, and ridiculous about running a business authentically. Whether you need an inspirational pick-me-up or a swift kick in the mental ass, the Gutsy Podcast is your bi-weekly guide to getting out of your head and back into action. I'm Laura Ora, branding and mindset coach for female entrepreneurs, CEO of Works & Co., and your host on this journey through entrepreneurship. It's time to fuel your gutsy. Welcome back to the Gutsy Podcast, and thank you for tuning in for this very special Gutsy exclusive featuring Jason Pfeiffer. Jason is the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine and the host of not one, not two, but three of his own podcasts. He's been an editor at Men's Health, Fast Company, Maxim, and Boston Magazine. And not to mention, he's written about business and technology for The Washington Post, Slate, New York, and so many others. His novel, Mr. Nice Guy, which he wrote with his wife, is currently being developed for television, and he and his family live in Brooklyn. Look, he has been on the front line watching businesses change and evolve, not only through the pandemic and through 2020, but he has studied change and people and behavior, and he's got a wealth full of knowledge to share with you today. Without further ado, Jason from Entrepreneur Magazine. Hey, Jason, welcome to the Gutsy Podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So today we're going to jump right in and we're going to talk about embracing change.
Great.
We have seen change in every form and fashion this year. I was on your Instagram earlier and I was reading, you talked about finding opportunity in crisis, how COVID forced us to reconsider the impossible. And I just thought that was so striking. So I was hoping that we could start there.
Yeah, sure. So a little fun historical fact, when this all began back in March or April or something, we had no idea what was going to happen in COVID. And I got to wondering, did anything good come out of like the worst version of this that I could think of, which was the bubonic plague of the 1300s? Just did anything good come out of that?
To compare it.
And so, well, you know, we didn't know. We didn't know back then how bad it was going to be. And so I called this guy, a medieval scholar named Andrew Rabin at the University of Louisville, and said, what good, if anything, came out of that time? And he had all sorts of fascinating answers. I'll give you one of them. So the economy of the 1300s was a, you're going to remember this from high school, a lord and serf system, which is to say the lords owned the land. They also owned the serfs. The serfs worked the land. They didn't get paid. They were slaves. It was slavery. And then the bubonic plague comes along in the 1300s and it wipes out up to 60% of Europe, which is an awful thing. And at the end of it, the lords want to get back to work. They want to start making money again. And so they start going to the serfs and say, okay, time to get back to work. And the serfs realize that there aren't enough serfs for all the lords. Multiple lords are going to the serfs and saying, no, come work for me. No, come for work for me. And so was born the idea that labor has value and that people should be compensated for that value. The serfs started to ask for compensation. This is the beginning of the employment contract as we know it. The very thing that you and I and all your listeners work for every single day, the idea that labor has value and that we should get paid for it, that comes out of this moment. And the reason I love this story is because did terrible things happen in the bubonic plague? Yes, they sure did. But what we got out of it was a reorganization of thought and a recognition that the way that things were done before doesn't make sense now. And that, in fact, we can reconsider the impossible. We can reconsider things that wouldn't have ever been thought of before, that seemed stupid or crazy or disgusting or impossible before. But now there are things that are so valuable to us that we would say, I wouldn't want to go back to a time before then. And that is what, in much smaller ways, obviously, because luckily 60% of the world is not getting killed by COVID, but in much smaller and more personal ways, I think we are seeing all the time now.
That is a really awesome story. I think it's really cool because we have seen businesses particularly, but people in general, what, you know, we're talking to business owners here about how the things that you wouldn't have even considered before, things that you, like you said, were silly or stupid or out of reach or just like not for me. Now it's all of a sudden, yeah, now we're dining in the streets, and now we're doing takeout, and now we're doing delivery, and we're doing all these things that we would have never, ever given ourselves a chance to even dabble into.
Right. And the crazy thing, and the most important part of that, is that all of that was available to us beforehand. None of this is new. It's not like these ideas got beamed down from Mars. Like, they were all available to us all the time, but we just didn't consider them. And that should be a lesson going forward, even when we're out of this, which is that great ideas, great change that will improve your business and your life are always available to you. They're just sitting right there. And it's upon you to go and actually try them out, to shake off these calcified ideas of what it is that you should be doing and how you should be operating, and instead say, there's a better way.
There is a better way. And I think, especially as entrepreneurs, I think we get wrapped up in this, like, well, what is that business doing? And what is the right way to do this? What is the wrong way to do this? And I think COVID really forced us to just, like, pause and be like, actually, what do I need to do right now? What do I need to do? What is best for me and my business, my employees, my family? And so you took away all that noise and just got back to basics.
Yeah, that's right. Well, yeah, got back to basics, but also took some Hail Marys, right? I mean, you know, I've seen businesses that shrunk themselves in positive ways, right? Shook off all this nonsense. You know, I talked to a woman who runs a winery. I think that's the word. They make wine, and they used to sell like a bazillion different SKUs, and they realized, you know what, this is taking too many resources to keep alive the ones that aren't selling really well. So why don't we just double down on the stuff that we know works and shrink our product offerings? And doing so has actually grown the business. So, you know, those are ways in which you could shrink. But then I've talked to lots of other companies who said, this is the moment for me to go out and create something totally fresh, totally new, rethink how my business or even my industry operates. And people are going to come along because now they need it. They don't have options. I mean, I talked to a guy who basically rethought how restaurants operate. He created something called Franklin Junction, it was basically like the Match.com of restaurants. So one restaurant can sell out of another restaurant's kitchen halfway around the country. That's a crazy idea that nobody would have liked before, because they would have said, this is an affront to the way the restaurants operate. And I spent millions of dollars buying and building a restaurant. And now, how dare you say that I actually don't need a kitchen at all? I can just sell out of a Ruby Tuesday somewhere in Florida. Like, that doesn't work. But it does now. It does now. He just can't keep up with the demand. And I asked him why. And he said, because restaurants need revenue and they need it yesterday. And so they're now willing to try things that they wouldn't have before. So it could go both ways.
What do you think it was about this pandemic, this like bigness of such an abrupt change in our lives that has sparked such innovation in people?
Well, it's a little bit of what we said before. It is, I talked to this guy named Brian Berkey at at Wharton School. He's a business ethics professor. And his explanation for why moments of crisis lead to great opportunity is that it shifts the window. These were his words. It shifts the window on what we were all willing to collectively take seriously. Just to say, again, these things were available to us before, but we weren't willing to consider them. And a moment of crisis throws everything out the window. And people start scrambling, and some people are going to fall under the weight of it. And others are going to say, okay, well, you know what? I just need to be as nimble as possible. And that means all options are on the table. And when all options are on the table, you're going to start to consider things you hadn't before. The lords could have always paid the serfs. It was always an option. And they just never did it because they didn't need to until times changed. And suddenly they needed to think of a different way to operate. And it turned out to be a much better way.
So many better ways. I mean, you're seeing it just come alive every single day. You're also hearing a lot of like, oh, I can't wait till it goes back to normal. I can't wait to go back to, I think you even mentioned on Instagram, the good old days. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about that concept and what you're hearing about going back to the good old days.
Oh, yeah. Well, I hate the good old days. The good old days is like, the good old days is truly about the worst thing that anybody has ever thought of, because it tries to fixate us in the past. I mean, this is what, if you look back at just to put this in context, if you look back at the history of humanity, what you see is essentially like a hockey stick of innovation starting around about like the 1600s, right? And of course, obviously more recently as technology has rapidly improved. But for most of human history, yeah, but that's not to say that it was just like everyone was just sitting around picking their noses in the mud, obviously like the Romans and the Egyptians. But for most of human history, progress happened very, very slowly. And the reason for that, if you go back, this is a theory of Joel Mokyr as an economist, that for most of human history, we practiced a kind of ancestor worship. The idea that everything you needed to know had come before. Everything that you needed to know was developed by our ancestors. And the only way that we can live healthy and happy lives is by spending all of our time focusing on and studying what our ancestors said. The idea of progress, that we might know more than our ancestors, is like brand new and was completely, it was repulsive to those people. And then we hit the Enlightenment and things started to change. And now we generally have this idea that progress is possible, that we can build better than the previous generation, but we haven't exactly fully shaken off ancestor worship. This idea that there was a better time, a golden age, good old days, the thing that came before was somehow better, that we've romanticized the past over and over and over again. We do it. I mean, there is an entire political movement today basically dedicated to saying that the 1950s are better than now. Go back to the 1950s. Nobody in the 1950s said that it was a good time, right? No. And in fact, you could just do this. And I have. I've literally called so many academics, dozens of academics, call somebody from the 1950s, who studies the 1950s and say, did those people think it was a golden age? No. When did they think the golden age was? Oh, it was the time before the Great Depression. Okay, call a person who studies the Great Depression. Did the people just before the Great Depression think that that was the golden age? No. When did they think? And you could go all the way back to literally cuneiform tablets from the Sumerians. You can find people always, every single moment in history saying that the time before theirs was better. It's completely ridiculous. It's a falsehood. It's a myth, and it holds you back. The time that came before you was not better than your own time. The only time we have is now, and you alone are the one that can make it better.
Truth. Oh my gosh, that's so true. And because even look at like the time before COVID, right? Like there's a romanticization. Saying that funky. But you know, we're looking back like, oh, let it go back to the way that it was before. And it's like, that wasn't perfect either.
And no, go back to 2019. If you were like, if you woke up in November of 2019 and just decided to start asking everybody, is this the best time? Nobody's going to say yes. It was 2019. What was special about 2019? But now that we're in COVID, yeah, everyone's like, oh my God, 2019 was amazing. No, I mean, I will tell you what's going to happen. As soon as everybody is vaccinated and as soon as we're able to all go back out into the streets, people are going to start getting nostalgic for this time right now. Oh, a simpler time when we all were able to spend time with family and we were so much more productive because we were at home. We will always romanticize the past. We'll always do it. And it's always a trap.
And I think in the same respect, not getting too far ahead of us and wishing away the time to get to the future. You know, people are like, oh, in 2021, it's going to be better and all this and all that. And people say that every New Year's, right? Like, oh, let's put this year to bed and this new year is going to be so much better. And so when you're living so far into the future, you're kind of robbing your joy of where you are right now and being in that moment.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, I do think if you're going to focus on something, it's better to focus on the future than the past, because
of course,
the future you can change and the past you can't. And also the future you can shape and the past, all you can do is shape it in your head, either as better than it was or worse than it was. But yeah, I mean, I think that a great challenge that entrepreneurs have is to balance these two things, to enjoy the moment, but also understand that your role in the moment is to build for the future, right? I mean, what am I doing every day? I'm not just like making things for right now. I'm making things for tomorrow. And I'm very mindful that like the only way that tomorrow gets built is to spend the time doing it today. So the challenge for all of us, I think, is to one, focus on what you can shape, which is the future. And at the same time, not be so obsessed with it that you miss the great moments today.
Yeah, absolutely. Change is hard. I don't care who you are or what you're doing. Change is challenging. And oftentimes there's resistance with it.
Yeah.
What recommendations, what advice do you have for entrepreneurs that are really struggling with the changes that they're being faced with right now?
So I think that you need to appreciate your own relationship with change. I'll give you two ways to think about that. One is to say, like, you come from the future, where you, like, every single thing about you, your your interests, your habits, the technology you use, the clothing that you wear, like your life, your lifestyle, all of that was new and scary to somebody who came before you. Like literally every single thing. I mean, things that you just can't possibly imagine were objectionable. Teddy bears, there was like a moral crisis about it across America in 1907. Like mirrors, people were freaking out about how mirrors were going to turn everybody narcissistic, just like we talk about selfies today. Every single thing. And so yet, you don't think that you are bad. Right? Like you don't think that you're a collection of bad things. You think you're a collection of good things. So good, in fact, that now the change has come along, you're like, no. You got to stop with that because I have the good things. We can't lose these good things. Right? But if you step back and realize that you are actually the product of change, then that means that you are actually the evidence that change can be good. Like it's you. You're the evidence of that. And therefore, if change, it can be good, if change created you, then the stuff that comes next isn't inherently bad. And in fact, you right now have the opportunity to step up and shape it. And so in doing that, I think it's important to remember this. We don't replace. Like I think that oftentimes we think change is scary because we think, oh, this new thing has come along. It's going to completely replace everything that I knew before. Like everything that I'm comfortable with and familiar with is like gone now and outdated and I'm angry because I'm left with nothing. And it's just like, that's not how it works. We don't replace, we integrate. Like new things come along and they integrate. We take the best of the old and we take the best of the new, right? People were freaking out about teddy bears. The reason was because they were replacing dolls. It's a whole long story. But anyway, they were what do we have now? We have teddy bears and we have dolls and we have television and we have radio and we have cars and we have bikes and we are, and once we're all vaccinated, we'll have remote work and we'll have in-office work. Like we always integrate. We never just wholesale replace. And I think that replacement is very, very scary to people, but integration should not be.
Oh, that's amazing. You have the most fascinating stories.
Thanks. Well, yeah, a lot of this comes. So I spend a lot of time studying the history of innovation and change. And so a lot of this stuff comes out of a podcast that I do, which is currently, speaking of change, currently called Pessimists Archive. So you can go find it as Pessimists Archive, but we're changing the name. And we're changing the name because it broadcasts the wrong thing to people. It's a four-year-old podcast. It has a great audience, but I found that the name is a barrier. People think it's a pessimistic show. It's not. The idea was that it was an archive of pessimists. So it was like pessimists from the past, but it just doesn't register to people. So I'm in the process of doing some rebranding now, which is annoying, but you know what? That's what you got to do.
Hey, that's what you do. You pivot, right?
Exactly.
One of your most recent quotes, you said, don't ask for the opportunity, be the opportunity. Mm-hmm. I just thought that was brilliant.
Thanks. Yeah, well, that comes out of my advice to people who send me terrible pitches. I just get a lot of emails from people who are like, you know, I would really like to write for Entrepreneur. I would like, can you give me the chance? I don't have a lot of experience, but I know that I can hustle, you know, whatever. Like I understand that this is something that people are told. It's like, just go out there. But you know, the thing is like, you can't just go around like asking people for opportunities. Just take a chance on me. I'll be like, no, that's just not how it works, right? You have to be the opportunity. Like I'm not sitting around thinking like, who should I possibly waste my time on today? No, right? Like what I'm doing is I'm sitting around and thinking like, what great things can I grab and put in front of my readers and make their lives better? And so I'm always looking for people who are going to bring opportunity. And that's true anywhere, right? You don't go to an investor and you're like, you know, I feel like I could make a great business. So someone just gave me the chance. No, you go and you're like, this is a great idea. This is it. It's going to make you a lot of money. I am the opportunity for you right now. So let's do this. Like that's how you have to present yourself because nobody is just sitting around like, taking random bets. People are looking for opportunity. And so you can't ask for it. You have to be it.
You have to be it. It's just a level of confidence that comes along with it. Like if you're him hauling or don't believe in it, how in the world is anyone else going to believe in it?
That's right. Nobody is. Nobody. It has to start with you.
It has to start with you. Well, I know that we're on a limited time. So my final question for you today is my favorite question is, Jason, I'm curious what gutsy means to you.
Yeah, well, that's a good question. It's funny. It's not a word that I use that often. And I think in part that's because I think I took a lot of chances in the earlier part of my career, which I suppose were gutsy when you look back on it, but they worked out in some way. Not perfect, right? But it's like I did something and it led to some kind of positive result. And as a result of that, I just built into myself the kind of trust that I can put myself out there and do things that I don't exactly know how to do. You do it often enough that it stops feeling gutsy and it just starts feeling like a trust within yourself. And so I would boil gutsy down. This is my like really kind of scattershot. I'm like connecting 14 different things here. But anyway, I would, you know that scene in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom where Indiana Jones steps out onto this chasm and has to just trust that there is this invisible walkway underneath him. I feel like that's what I'm doing all the time. Like that's kind of what like gutsy is. It's like you have to know that the walkway is there even though you can't see the walkway. So you have to be able to balance those two things in your head at the same time.
Oh, brilliant. Fantastic. Jason, thank you so much for spending time with us today. Thank you for everything that you do for the business community, for your community, you know, and just keeping us rolling through this year of change.
Hey, I appreciate it. Be well. We're all going to get through it and we're going to get through it better.
We sure will. Stay gutsy.
Yeah, thanks. Take care.
What a powerful, powerful episode. Jason is a wealth full of knowledge and his stories and the history of life and business is nothing short of incredible. We've got links to connect with Jason in the show notes of this episode. And I just want to close you out with this one thing. You know, he talked about don't ask for the opportunity, be the opportunity. And these gutsy exclusive episodes are happening because I'm asking. Everything that you're working for, every vision that you have, every goal that you're setting out for is completely possible if you choose to show up, stay the course of your mission and your why, and sometimes simply just ask. You can check out previous episodes of the Gutsy Podcast, including the other Gutsy exclusives at thegutsypodcast.com. Be sure to get social with me at @ThatLauraAura online. And as always, until I see you next time, stay gutsy.